Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Can a 40-something single woman have it all, baby included? Fox presents this unscripted conundrum Thursday night on Labor of Love, hosted by Kirsten Davis. Executive producers Spike Van Briesen and Anne Walls join me next from Los Angeles. Think you've seen every travel series around? Then hear our next half hour about the new public television series Fly Brother. Our guide, host Ernest White II, live from San Francisco. And we'll deliver a second season preview of The Slip, happening Thursday, with creator and executive producer Abby Morgan. That's coming an hour from now from London. Also ahead, oh, Canada TV's reopening and some taxings. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Great to have you with us to kick off your week with the program All About Television. First of 3 episodes we're doing this week, all 90 minutes or more. Lots of great guests as the week unfolds, and we're happy you are aboard right from the start. 67 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and as always, we invite you to be part of the program. It gets better when you interact with us and our guests. So pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And we have a chat room if you're shy about the phone. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, you're interacting with us. And while the program is on the air, you can connect with us by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk speaker or TuneIn screen. Follow instructions, other people can be live with you. Our dynamic pair from Live With Love, coming Thursday night on Fox, will join us live from Los Angeles after these news note quickies. CBS will disclose its 2020-21 season plans tomorrow through a virtual presentation. Whatever comes out of that, we hope to have it for you on Wednesday's episode. Netflix's second season of The Umbrella Academy, one of the most popular series at Netflix, opens July 31st. Breeders will be back on FX next year. And more than 6.3 million people watched the return of live NASCAR racing without a cheering crowd on Fox yesterday. There was another live event also yesterday. That was the golf tournament on NBC with Rory McIlroy and fellow pros. We don't have the rating numbers or viewership numbers for that yet. If we do get them for the end of the program, we'll pass them along to you. And that is news notes for today. This Thursday night, Fox unveils its latest relationship program. It's called Labor of Love, and it's very different because rather than have like totally beautiful people like you see on The Bachelor, The Bachelor, etc., we're talking about people who are somewhat mature in their 40-somethings, at least the person who is trying to go for love, and this is somebody who wants to have it all, including a child in her life. The program is hosted by Sex and the City star Kristen David. And joining us live to talk more about the program, two of the executive producers live from Los Angeles, Spike Van Briesen and Anne Wall. Spike and Anne, welcome in.
Thank you for having us.
It is a pleasure to have you both. And Anne, we'll start with you. How long has Labor of Love been in the works for?
The idea for Labor of Love happened a little bit ago, and we luckily got everything shot before the pandemic that we're all in right now. But it was for us really about the process of putting the show together was important to find the right woman, to find the right woman to embody everything we were hoping this show could be, which is showing that there's not, like you said, not one right way to have it all, and there's not one right time to have it all. So our casting process, we were very careful and very excited to find someone like Christy who is willing to take us on this journey with her.
It also suggests, Spike, that life for some women can begin at 40 or can transform into a whole different direction.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's really interesting when we started looking at the idea of what does parenthood look like in 2020? I don't think it's the idea that it used to be where it's like a certain order of events. I think women are, myself included, working really hard on many levels and sometimes find themselves feeling like they're pushed up against the clock. And I think what our show does that's very interesting is not only shines a light on Exactly. Someone who's 41 going on a journey where she has every option. She can find someone to fall in love with. She can find a co-parent. She could do it on her own. She could adopt. She could do whatever she wants. But we're examining also all of these men that are on the show are men who also, just as much as she, want to be dads. And I think that's the conversation that isn't happening so much right now. And we're excited to kind of push that to the forefront of there's two people, you know, involved in becoming parents. And a lot of times people assume it's all on the woman, but this is a show that really shows guys want to be dads too. And we're excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Spike, what was it like to get the men on this program? Was there a specific kind of person or a certain ambiance about the person that you wanted to have meet the woman who wants to have this labor of love happen?
Well, first of all, we had to find out what it is that our Christy was looking for in a man. And because, you know, like you said, that this is a woman that is, you know, a very successful, established, smart, professional woman, we looked for men that were the same, but we also wanted to give a variety of different men. So we did a nationwide casting that we were scouting all different cities looking for men that would fit what she was looking for, but would also give her a bit of variety. So it was a amazing process, but it was also a long process. And we're very happy with everybody that we got.
And give us the biography of Christy. What is she successful at? What had her decide, I'm going to make my life public in this way, and what I'd like to get from life from here on in this way? And how did all of you meet up?
I'm going to share this question with Spike just because he got to really have a lot of experience with her when they were shooting in person for so long. But from what I, you know, Christy is a diamond in the rough in the way of wanting to share this on a public platform. But Christy is absolutely not a one-of-a-kind woman who is looking at turning 40, turning 41 and wanting a baby and trying to figure out how to make that happen for herself. She's from Chicago. She has an amazing family. She has great friends. Her parents are really sweet. And she has a sister who's just great. Like, she is a lot of women. She's worked in a couple different industries, and I don't know if Spike can speak to that a little bit more. And she has these great friends, and she, you know, you'll see in the show, she talks about her past relationships and how, what has happened with them and what she's looking for now. But basically, we found Christy when she literally had just decided she was having a baby this year one way or another. Like, she basically said the universe sort of, like, lined this up for her where she decided that to make her life move forward, she had to say yes to everything. And I really love how she puts that. She has some really nice interviews out where she basically says, the only thing you can control is open to everything. And she has found that forward movement is what makes everything happen. So I really just admire her for taking us on this journey with her. And I don't know, Spike, if you can add any more color commentary since you know her so well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's pretty easy to say this is a very unconventional journey towards love and motherhood. But Christy decided, like Ann said, that at 41, this was the time that she was going to do it. And although it's unconventional, she trusted us a lot in finding those men, and we think that we've found great men. And you know, who's to say how we're supposed to do this in 2020? And this is just one of the ways that that Christy decided to go ahead and jump in. You know, really head first in a really great way.
Well, welcome SC-1 into our chat room, Simon Apple 04. But and welcome aboard. Happy to have you with us. If you have a question or comment for our guests, either use the chat room or put the phone to work, 646-652-2906. Our first subject this afternoon on Tomorrow's Televised, the new Fox relationship series, Labor of Love. It premieres this Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. And we are talking with two executive producers live from Los Angeles, Spike Van Breesen and Ann Walls. And again, if you'd like to be part of the conversation, make the call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Here with you from New York, they're from Los Angeles, and we're all here together live this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And coming up, we have two more great shows coming your way. Another 90-Minute Beauty coming up on Wednesday at this very hour. And joining us off the bat, remember iCarly? Miranda Cosgrove, Well, she is back on television, a brand new series that just won one of the Gracie Awards handed out last week by American Women in Radio and Television. It's called Mission Unstoppable. It's on weekends, and it also features Gina Davis as executive producer. Anna Wenger, the producer and showrunner of Mission Unstoppable, will be our lead guest. And then, the former head of CNBC and TiVo, Tom Reiners, will join us. His latest enterprise, Engine Media. And last week, they came out with a brand new network on smart TV sets and smart devices called UMG TV. It's all about gaming, esports, and interactivity you can do at home through your television set. And finally, we'll have the documentary producer behind an interesting public television documentary coming up later this month called Viral, Antisemitism in Four Mutations. Producer director Andrew Goldberg. That's all coming up Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And both you and Spike, have you both been, is this your first shot at unscripted television? And if not, let's start with you first. What's been your path in this whole environment of unscripted?
I'm happy to say, familiar with making unscripted TV that changes the game in different industries. I'm one of the producers of Project Runway, and the company I work for was one of the co-creators of Project Runway. So, you know, 16 seasons ago, we got the idea of showing America what it was like to actually be backstage at a runway show and kind of giving up-and-coming designers a big chance. And we, I'd say, did a pretty interesting job of taking something kind of unknown and bringing it to the masses. And after the show premiered, you know, years and years later, we can look back and see that there was a complete uptick in submissions and applications to become, to go to fashion school. So it's been really kind of in our DNA to try to make shows that are disruptive and interesting. And I myself have worked on a variety of different unscripted shows over the years, Animal Planet and Fox and a bunch of other places. So it's pretty exciting to be part of a show that is going to get a lot of people talking. And I think that a show like this that gets people excited to go on a journey with someone, but also have fun. That's something we really worked hard on the show, is that the tone of the show is sweet, and we also tried to make it a bit of a romantic comedy kind of throwback. You'll see that there's the parents are all involved. There's fun, you know, things happening at different events and places that we wanted to be buoyant and fun and make people feel happy. So it's really fun to be a part of a project like this.
Mm-hmm. Spike, I understand that you have a bit of a resume in the world of unscripted.
Yeah, I actually started out in scripted television. I worked at MTV, and I did a series called Undressed, and we had a writer's strike, which kind of forced me to go into unscripted, but I really fell in love with it. The first unscripted series I did was a show called The Hills, and moved that on to a show called The City, and have then gone on to really try to help reinvent, and that's what I feel like we get to do in Unscripted, is really invent some new ways of getting our stories across. I did a show called The Millionaire Matchmaker for a long time, and I've worked with Simon Cowell on The X Factor and Gordon Ramsay, and each of those shows, I feel like I get to bring something new and to them, and doing Labor of Love was one of those projects where with Anne and Lori propagated thoughts that you really got to go outside of the boundaries of what you would normally see in a dating reality relationship show, and push the envelope, and I think that's what we did with it, and it was a really great experience.
Yeah. And you inferred that our heroine does not go through this journey alone, that she does involve her family. What is her family like? What do they think about the idea of being part of this?
Spike, you want to I mean, they're supportive, for sure.
What does her family think about it?
Sure, what does that person's family think about it? Yeah.
They're 100% supportive of Christy. They support this journey. I think that what we love about this show is that they really let you know that throughout this show. They give you great insight of what they're feeling, but they also give you insight of what they think that Christy is going through and what kind of mother she'll be. And they get to, you know, make calls on the men that she's with. It's a really positive experience, and her family was completely supportive of it, as were the men.
And when you get somebody like a Kirsten Davis, who we all come to know from her work on Sex and the City and other things too in television and film, that she's not just there to be sort of the narrator and the innocent bystander host. And what do you see as her role? What kind of involvement does she have in all this?
I mean, I love that you're asking that, because that's, you've exactly zeroed in on what our goal was that ended up happening was, you know, Kirsten Davis is someone who everyone knows, so that always helps to have someone that is a familiar and feels like a friend. But we were also pretty tactical in picking her because Kirsten Davis is someone who has become a parent on her own terms as well. She talks about this. She has adopted kids. So we were really kind of invested in making sure that we told the story of parenting and its many iterations on every level of the show. And exactly to what you just said, a host just comes and says, now we're going to do this and leave. Kristen has such a big heart. She can't help herself. And it was just, we hoped that she and Christy would get along. And we were so happy to find that they really did become confidants. Like going through a journey like this, even if you bond with the guys, which Christy does, you need someone else to be able to talk to, especially talk about them and talk about the decisions she's making. And she and Kristen, as the 8 episodes go on, you really see them get closer and closer to it. At the end, it's almost like they're really closely helping each other make this decision. We're really happy about that. We really do think Kristen Davis she's the real deal, and she's just an amazing person. So it was really lucky that she decided to do the show with us.
Spike mentioned a moment ago that you had the experience with Undressed, which a lot of people still remember as one of the hallmarks of MTV in all their programs. That's the one that Roland Jaffe did, which was, I said, a groundbreaker in terms of storytelling and so forth. How did that experience help you deal with the whole world of Unscripted and to sort of either take what you learned on the storytelling side of Undressed and bring it to any type of Unscripted show? How did it help you?
I mean, I think it helped me in this way. Undressed, we made those seasons very quickly. So those writer rooms, we moved the scripts through them very quickly. The ideas came out very quickly. We shot very quickly. All of those things. So when I came into The Hills, it's kind of the same thing. Although we were still writing scripts on The Hills, we weren't writing. What we were doing was following story as it was folding. So I think the sheer volume that we were doing on Undressed helped me come over into Unscripted and really learn how to follow a story as it unfolded, and being able to pivot quickly and being able to connect the stories. And, you know, The Hills was one of the first series, I think one of the only ones that just used the interview to tell the story. We tell the story through what the cast was going through. And so just in that was really helpful for me to have that scripted background to then transfer it into The Hills, to help transfer it to The Hills, I should say.
Fox is bringing out Labor of Love, its latest relationship program, this Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. That's, of course, on your local Fox station, including WNYW here in New York City. We are speaking with two of the key executive producers behind the series, Spike Van Breesen and Ann Walls, are both live with us from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Simon Apple with you from the other end of the U.S. of A, whoever you are. We're at 67 degrees at the top of the hour. And, of course, there are coming our remaining minutes with Spike and Ann. Well, make the call go for you, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Day 2-hour episode closing out the week and kicking off your Monday weekend on Friday. Stars had a brand new dramedy premiere last night called Hightown. And we will have Rebecca Cutter, the creator and executive producer of that program, as our lead guest. By the way, that's the program that has directing by the award-winning cinematographer Rachel Morrison of Mudbound, Fruitvale Station, and even a great episode of American Crime Fame. That's Rebecca Cutter from Hightown on Stars. She's our lead guest on Friday's episode. Also on Friday, we'll introduce you a new network on smart TV sets and smart devices called Unidentified. It's all about UFOs, conspiracy theories, everything in between. We'll have executive in charge, Adam Bustoff. And then we'll spotlight a program out to get more people of color involved in television. It's from the American Film Institute. You will meet one of the executives involved at AFI in the program. You will meet one of the mentors in the program. who has their own stuff going on with AMC Networks, and we're also at one of the participants. That's in order, Anna Thomas, Latoya Morgan, and Kendra Greenwood Moran from the AFI 2020 Writers Ready Room Project. They're all coming up on our program. And finally, and we just got this announced, we will have from the new National Geographic miniseries, Farskins, Executive Producer and Director David Slade. Big two-hour edition to kick off your Memorial Day weekend, Friday, live, 3:30 Eastern Pacific here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And it sounded earlier like both you and Spike and your fellow executive producers had to play Beat the Coronavirus Clock to get this on the air. What kind of a time frame were you under to get this show done?
I mean, when we were shooting, we were ahead of everything being shut down, so we were okay that way. We didn't have to rush or change anything, even at the end. And post-production just became slightly stressful, but totally manageable. So nothing really, horrible. We shot in Atlanta, which was amazing. The place they live plays into this a lot, so you'll see kind of the fun of where the guys live and where Christy lives in the show. I think that this is a show that is especially, related to the kind of pandemic we're all in right now. I think this will provide some fun, kind of uplifting, happy escapism, while at the same time we sort of look at the show as like happiness and joyousness kind of wrapped with a messaging in the middle of there isn't, like we talked about, one right way to have it all. So we kind of shoved a lot in, eight short episodes, but we're really excited. Timing-wise, it's kind of a perfect time for people to be able to really pay attention to something like this and have a good time along the way.
Mm-hmm. Spike, what surprised you about the behavior of the men in the situation? Did you see something that sort of came out of left field in terms of how men deal with this kind of situation?
Yeah, I think that what you get to see on this show is men talking about parenthood very candidly, and I don't think that we see that a lot in television, in unscripted television. I think that once they were, placed into the, for lack of a better term, the bubble of this show, they really started to think about what it was, and before even coming into it, before coming into it, they started to think about what it would mean to be a father and mean to be a parent. And what you get to hear is a male perspective from that I don't think that you've seen or heard in any, for sure, unscripted series. I think that they bonded together in this journey. They also, found out about their own male biological clock and that, being in their 40s, that this is the time that they all acknowledge that they hadn't been thinking about it this way. And when you hear them discuss this, I think it's a really refreshing, I think it's just a really refreshing way that they talk about it. That they all have fears, they all have different concerns, but they also have this incredible, need and want to become fathers, and that their time is, now. So I think that was really refreshing for all of us to hear. Don't you think, Dan?
Yeah, I think I was going to say, even, and you touched on this too, when we were casting, it wasn't like we were looking across the nation and really having to struggle to find some guys for the show. It was actually the exact opposite. And I've said this before, like, we had this embarrassment of riches with the guys when we were casting that we were like, we only need 15, and we have so many good ones. And they all, like, are their own, just from different walks of life with different careers and different kind of, like, views on parenthood and where they see themselves. We had so many good ones. I wish we could make 3 seasons at the same time because we just had so many interesting people who wanted to be involved. I was just really excited about that.
Mm-hmm. And before we go, what's the big message that you want women to take away from this series?
I think the big message that I would love people to take from the show, and it is, I'm stealing this from Christy a little bit, is life unfolds fast, and I think that things don't always work out the way you think they will. But if you are open and you say yes to things and you truly consider every possibility, you can absolutely have the life that you've imagined. You absolutely can. And it's about truly being a person who embraces everything that life shows you. So I think there's just a lot of, I think, comfort to come for this for people who are worried and they, you know, whether they're in a relationship or not, are up against a clock with, you know, biology and time. I think there's always more time than you think. And I think that being really open is going to yield something amazing for you.
Chapter 1 of Labor of Love, Fox's latest relationship program, premieres this Thursday night on your local Fox station, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Check your local listings for the Fox station in your area and for more details about the program online, fox.com. That's F-O-X, Fox. .com. Labor of Love, Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Spike Von Breeson and Ann Wall, thank you both very, very much for coming on the program. Good luck with the series, and hopefully a good, good run in store.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to be here. Thanks for coming.
You're very welcome, Spike and Ann. Take care. Enjoy the week.
Thank you.
You too.
Spike Von Breeson and Ann Rolls joining the five from Los Angeles. More tomorrow's televised headed to you, but first we have some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. You know, a lot of people are still talking about Little Fires Everywhere. It ran earlier this spring on Hulu. It's getting rave reviews. A lot of people think that's going to be up for a lot of Emmy Awards in the miniseries category a little later this year. And if you haven't checked out the Hulu presentation, you can check out the audiobook presentation of Fleming's big bestseller. How do you do that? You get a trial run to Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles you can choose from at any time, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, or iHeartRadio. All you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. Very simple. audibletrial.com/televised. You get one. You actually get three free audiobooks, a 1 month trial of the service, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And that's not all. Two of the three audiobooks you select are from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That's everything from original audio productions to great one-woman and one-man shows and the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, anytime you like. So how does this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, be the weekend that you discover how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world? This pandemic time, it's a great gift more than ever before for you and some you love. So check it out, starting at audibletrial.com/televised. This is Tomorrow We Televise. We have a program all about the tube. We're the first of three episodes we're doing this week, all 90 minutes or more. That's today, Wednesday, Friday, all at this very hour. And remember, we get the show better when you are involved. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And if you're new to the program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, we make it very easy for you. Just go anytime you like to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And then check out us on podcast. All you got to do is go to iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker Podcast app, TuneIn.com and iHeart.com or iHeartRadio.com. And if you go to the latter two, that's TuneIn and iHeartRadio's websites, you put Tomorrow Will Be Televised in the search bar, the title of our show, you click it, and then you get our shows right then and there. So give us a shot, either this week or over the Memorial Day weekend. We got some great listening for you. We have wonderful guests so far this month and all year long, and it's a wonderful way to pass the time in these pandemic times. Remember, we are available at blogtalkradio.com/televised 24/7. Coming up in our next hour, among other things, we will have the award-winning writer and executive producer of the popular Sundance TV series, The Split. On Thursday night, it goes into season number 2. Abby Moore will join us live from London. Also, keep your eye up north on Canada. They may soon be getting back into TV production post-pandemic environment. And if they do, how will it impact what's going on here in these United States when it comes to getting TV production back on track? I'll have some thoughts about that coming up toward the top of the hour. But first, we're going live to San Francisco, and we'll speak with public television's newest travel star, Ernest White II, from Fly Brother. He will join us after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You'll see the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and TuneIn.com, or TuneIn Radio. All told, reaching over 40 million listeners around the world every month, and growing. And don't forget, TuneIn Radio is your home 24/7 for the Coronavirus News Channel. Get the latest developments from all over the world, plus original podcasts, other great audio for you. Updated all the time, the Coronavirus News Channel. Check it out 24/7, TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. It could be a lifesaver for you or others you love. Welcome back to the Modern Televised, second half hour of this 90-minute episode to kick off your week. Happy to have you joining us on this pre-Memorial Day week for you. Simon Apple down, coming your way live from New Weather, York, 67 degrees top of the hour. More great guests coming your way at the hour, handling by the unique part of the program. It's so simple. Just give us a call, 646-652-2906, or if you're shy about the phone, use the chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Over the years, public television has had all types of lifestyle shows, everything about food, sewing, gardening, all sorts of stuff, but very few shows about the world of travel. While the latest contribution that PTV is making in that environment is a series called Fly Brother, and here to talk about it is its host, joining us live from San Francisco, Ernest White II. Hello, Ernest.
Hey, Simon. Thank you for having me on today.
You're very, very welcome. Like I said, travel is not really the kind of subject you find on public television, especially when you have networks like the Travel Channel or you have syndicated shows like Raw Travel. What had you decide, I want to be part of this PTV environment, and I think travel is a great topic for it?
Well, you know, actually, I'll slightly and respectfully disagree, because we've had Rick Steves on public television for about 25 years. We've got Samantha Brown on public television as well. Michaela Malozzi. So there is travel, and there always has been. However, it's not been, let's say, as high profile maybe as some of the other shows that are, like NewsHour, for example. I'm excited to kind of stick to, or be following in their footsteps and spreading the gospel of travel to people everywhere, regardless of whether or not they've got a paid TV service.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. For those who don't know about Michaela Malozzi, she's a dancer based here in New York. The show that she does, which is carried on some public television stations here, is called Bare Feet. It's sort of, I think the first year is travel, the second year is more, she's in New York, and she samples different cultures, food and dance, or cultures,
sure.
Food,
sure.
Et cetera, in New York City. So there's a little bit of a special definition there. And a good show, by the way, too, and I hope it comes back for another season sometime soon. You can see it, by the way, on Channel 25. NYC Life here in the New York metro area, and again syndicated on other PTV stations. So anyway, how did you get involved with doing Fly Brother?
Well, so I was actually living abroad for a while as a journalist and educator. I had a travel blog that was called Fly Brother that was talking about my travels and expat life as a person of color living overseas, and people were very interested. That was when blogs were very popular. Back in the 2009, 2010, 2011. And one of my buddies from college was involved in a small startup cable network, and he reached out to me and asked if I would be interested in creating a show that they could use on their network. As a startup, it wasn't going to be paid, but he'd give me all the support that I needed, and it would be a non-exclusivity agreement. So if we ended up having a show that was sold, great. And so that's how we got started. But sadly, that network went dark. It went out of business before we were finished filming. And so we ended up having a cart with no horse for a little while. And I ended up connecting with friends that were in the industry, people like Michaela, who kind of made some initial introductions with the public television sphere. And now we are in the process of debuting on public television stations nationwide.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the purpose of Fly Brother? What are you out to do that other – how are you zagging, let's say, in the world of travel where other TV series or a network like Travel Channel is zigging?
Sure. Well, essentially, my focus is on friendship and connection. You know, I've traveled to some 70 countries. I've lived in five. None of that is to say that, I'm, you know, all of that for having traveled. The idea is I want people to get out into the world. I want people to have these amazing – experiences that I've had connecting with people, creating global community. And right now, we've got the technology that allows us to stay in touch with the people that we meet. Before, you had to spend, you know, $6 a minute on a phone call, a long-distance phone call, or send a letter to a pen pal. But now everybody that I've met is on my phone in WhatsApp or on Facebook. And so just knowing that the experiences that I've had, the feeling of welcome and of home that I've been given by people in disparate places such as Tajikistan or Sao Paulo, Brazil, you know, going to those places and knowing that we really just all want the same things in life, that's what I'm hoping to communicate to people, the audience, through my show.
How do you think this pandemic environment has impacted that desire by people to travel and maybe even provoke more interest in what you're doing?
I think that this is actually a time when the world is coming together, just as we see governments and other institutions maybe retrenching. You know, we are all affected by this pandemic, no matter where we're from, no matter what society, what level, socioeconomic level, what background, we're all affected by it. So that right there is just an example of how connected we really are. And I think the fact that people who have kind of wanted to travel now, up to now and haven't, might be reassessing themselves and thinking, you know what, I don't like this isolation. I don't like necessarily being disconnected. And so I feel like there is an opportunity that's happening now for people to take stock of where they are in their lives, to recognize the great connectivity that we all have as human beings on this planet. And as soon as things are lifted, as soon as we're able to get out in the world again, I'm expecting more people to be engaged in that. Mm-hmm. And to do so more sustainably and considering their physical environment and traveling with greater intention.
When you go to a specific location to film or tape an episode, how long do you stay? Is it a one-person crew, you and with a camera by your side, or do you have a crew that works with you?
Sometimes there's just two of us, myself and my cameraman, Pedro Serra, who is based in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Sorry, he's based in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And then occasionally we'll have a second crew member, so the three of us total. But generally it's been anywhere between 4 and 11 days in a location. It just depends on how much time we've got, where we're going, if we're working with a local destination or if we're doing everything independently. You know, it's been kind of all over the place in terms of our filming, but I would say between 4 and 11 days, and then also generally two of us, but sometimes three.
We're speaking with Ernest White II. He is the host of Public Television's new series, My Brother, which is carried on various PTV stations all over the country. And he joins us live this half hour from San Francisco. This half hour
yes,
on
sir.
Tomorrow will be televised. A great, great city. Simon Applebaum here with you live from the other side of the country. That's New York, where it is now 67 degrees at the top of the hour. Beautiful day here in the Big Apple. And we invite you, wherever you are, to be part of the program, because we're coming your way all around the mundo here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. We're also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. So wherever you are, be involved with us. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Like I said earlier, first of three episodes of the Paul Wallbach Television this week. We have another 90-minute show for you coming up on Wednesday. Joining us first will be Anna Wenger, the producer and showrunner of the award-winning weekend series Mission Unstoppable, executive produced by none other than Gina Davis, and hosted by iCarly herself, Miranda Cosgrove. The series just won the Gracie Award. That's the annual award given out for media by American women in radio and television. And then the former head of CNBC and TiVo, Tom Rogers, will join us. He's now executive chairman of Engine Media, and they have a brand new network that just started on smart TV techs and smart devices called UMG TV. It's all about gaming, esports, and yes, you can even be interacting with the programming from home. And we'll have Andrew Goldberg, who has a new documentary coming to public television called Viral, Antisemitism in 4 Mutations. That is all Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. How many plays have you gone so far for Fly Brother?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question one more time?
Sir? Sure. I mean, how many places have you gone so far for Fly Brother? How many countries or how many cities have you
Got
gone
it.
To?
For season one, we actually have expanded. So we have 11 destinations that we're covering. It was an initial 8 episodes, but now we are expanding to 10. And the last episode will have kind of like a double feature in two different places. So 11 cities total.
Mm-hmm. And talk about some of the cities you've gone to and what really excited you once you were there about what you discovered.
Sure. So in season one, we start off in Sao Paulo, Brazil, one of my favorite cities on the planet. I was excited to bring the audience into a community that I know well. I lived there for 3 years as a journalist. And we go to a samba school rehearsal. We hang out with two very good friends of mine who really just give me a sense of home whenever I'm there. We go to Stockholm, one of my favorite cities in Europe, also with two very good friends of mine that show me interesting elements of the city and why they love it so much. In Tajikistan, which is a country that I went to in 2016 to update a guidebook and just fell in love with the people as well as the landscapes. It's a place that people know not much about, and I was excited to really kind of give them an opportunity to tell their stories there in Tajikistan to the world. Namibia, where we spent 11 days just connecting with the people in the north part of the country. I got to meet a Namibian king and be accepted into his homestead and really just connect with people in the way that I love to connect with folks, just seeing that we all want to be seen and empowered and loved. And each destination, I feel like there's some of that, no matter where we go.
When you get invited by the ruler of the country or the ruler of the area, is there like a special tingle you get or like a special like vibe you get from, I'm going to get to see something that the majority of billions on this planet will never get to see in their lifetime?
There is some excitement, and there's definitely a sense of humility that comes along with having been chosen to do this job. You know, we are all, again, human beings. We all want the same thing. So then, again, that is to be seen and be loved. And it doesn't matter if you're royalty or you work as a janitor or anything in between. The idea is that we're all people and we all want to be connected. And it's exciting to me to be able to be the conduit, to be that bridge between cultures and communities, and really then have the opportunity to show my American community what the world is like and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Go back to Sao Paulo for a moment. Of course, we got to know Rio, especially around the time of the Summer Olympic Games a few years ago.
Yeah.
But Sao Paulo also is a very, very special city in Brazil.
Sao Paulo is huge. You know, it's 20 million people, 20 million Brazilians, which means, you know, if you want to go with the stereotype, there are many parties. You know, it's definitely a 24-hour city. And at the same time, you know, it's the financial capital. It is a hub of industry and of creativity. And a lot of people don't know that about Sao Paulo. They'll fly in to change planes and go off to Rio or the Amazon or Salvador. But they really sometimes don't get a lot. They don't spend a lot of time in the city. And you often have a lot of people from Sao Paulo who always, you know, they were jetting off to Rio and Miami and New York and not really giving their hometown a chance. But I was there working as an assistant editor at Time Out Sao Paulo magazine. So it was my job to get under the skin of the city and find out everything there was to do in that place. And I really fell in love with it early on. And I recognize that a lot of people, you know, kind of look at it as, oh, it's big and ugly and just unwieldy. But I think there's beauty in that unwieldiness. And I really am excited to show folks what there is to do in that megalopolis.
When you get into that kind of situation, Ernest, where you're like swept into a culture or swept into a situation wherever you are. How does that guide your narrative? How does that guide what you say to us about the culture that you're documenting?
I suppose it has me speak from a place of authenticity, certainly, from a place of recognition. I think it allows me to go deeper than if I were just skirting on that surface level of what's the best restaurant, what's the best this, you know, what's the top 10 list. It's I'm able to really take a deep dive into a place, mostly because I'm the type of person that is okay with engaging with people no matter what. You know, I recognize that sometimes, and I also learned the language. You know, that helps me. Living in Brazil, I was able to have conversations with people in Portuguese, and that really kind of takes you even deeper. And that was not the case in a place like Tajikistan, for example, where I didn't speak Russian or Tajik, but I was still able to connect on that human level. And I think when you are able to do that, when you're able to go deep in a culture just one time, you always want that experience everywhere you go. And even if you don't get it on a larger level, you know, there are some places that I go that I don't necessarily feel like I'm able to connect as deeply, but that's okay too. I know that, again, no matter where we're from, humans just want to connect with other humans. And I'm excited that I've been able to help to develop those skills, and I want other people to have those as well.
The episodes that have been on public television so far, what's gotten the most reaction, or what's gotten the most unique reaction, the reaction that came way out of left field?
Well, I think right now we're just getting started. I would say episode 3 is airing this week on some of our initial stations, which would be in the Twin Cities, San Francisco Bay Area. And so there hasn't been necessarily a lot of the show that's been out there just yet. Some stations are just coming out with episode 1. So I think it's a bit early to hear a lot of feedback other than general positivity, which I'm happy about and accept gratefully.
Fly Brother is the public television series we are talking about, and it may be on a public television station near you. It is being syndicated to various public television stations, so some stations have it, and some stations do not, or will down the road. We'll tell you how you can find out in a little bit. We're speaking with the host of the program, Ernest White II. He joins us live from San Francisco this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Finally, I'm with you live from New Weber, York. You have a question or comment on remaining minutes with Ernest? Well, don't be shy. Get involved. Ring this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up before the top of the hour, a comment about a country up north that you should pay attention to, especially if you want to see TV production resume in these United States. That is coming up. And also later on, we will have mileposts on 3 people who passed away over the weekend, all who made great contributions to the TV world. And in one case, TV, film, and general entertainment. Get to that toward the end of today's program. Ernest, one thing we're seeing with public television as well as with other television forms is how people are dealing with the coronavirus pandemic in terms of producing shows, doing segments from home, stretching or connecting guests from other locations and so on and so forth. How has the pandemic impacted your ability to get your series on public television?
That's a good question, Simon. So we were in the post-production process just as quarantine orders were coming down, both here in California and in Brazil, where my production team is located. And so it has been a challenge. Things have slowed down because people are not working out of their offices. They're teleworking. Internet speeds and home environments aren't necessarily the same as they were in offices. People are having to deal with taking care of their children and other responsibilities now that have kind of fallen into their sphere while they're trying to do the work. And so we kind of have been really challenged by a slower time frame and also just a lot of extra communication that's had to happen. But we're doing it. We're cranking out the final episodes. We're getting them uploaded into the system, and we're excited about showing people that even in these times of uncertainty, of great and radical, transformation, we're still able to deliver, you know, and it's exhausting, but it's exciting at the same time.
Yeah. Incidentally, Ernest, is your program distributed directly through PBS, or is it through a service like American Public Television or Interregional Program Service, which has programs available throughout the week at various times?
Yeah. Yes, good question. Our show is distributed through NETA, the National Education Television Association, I believe. I can't remember what the A stands for, but NITA is our distributor, which, of course, as you alluded to, Simon, is under the umbrella of Public Television Distributors.
Yeah. It sort of goes back to the early days when we had an organization called National Educational Television, which bicycled various programs, national programs, to public television stations, and then it got interconnected in the late 60s with PBL, the Public Broadcast Lab, and that, of course, led to Sesame Street, and ultimately the creation of PBS. So very interesting kind of thing. Ernest, what can we look forward to with future segments?
So we're excited to already be in conversation with several destinations, and my team is kind of ready to go to film season two. We actually had a shoot canceled. We were going to travel in April. I can't really say where, but it was all lined up, and we were excited to get started with season two. However, that's been, you know, postponed. And as things start moving forward again, we are excited to see where things go. You know, we are eager to launch back out into the world. And to we know that things are not the same as they were before, but that's okay. You know, we're still here, and we need to be connecting with each other even more so than before. And so that's what we're doing right now, is we're laying the groundwork to get season two out.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the key, by the way, what are some of the key public television stations that are running this series?
At the moment, we've got Twin Cities PBS. We've got KQED in the Bay Area of San Francisco. We've got Inland Empire PBS in Southern California. We have WHUT in the Washington, D.C. area. We've got Maryland Public Television for the entire state of Maryland, South Carolina Educational TV in the state of South Carolina, Nashville Public Television just came on board, Providence, Rhode Island, Marquette, Michigan, South Bend, Indiana, and Duluth, Minnesota, I believe, are all the places right now where the show is airing. And then we've got a few more places coming down the pike, including Create TV nationwide later in the summer. And that's
the name of the program. Yeah, absolutely. The name of the programming is Fly Brother. It's on every week on many public television stations across the country and more to come. So check your local listings for the PBS station in your area. And remember, both you got to find out if the station area is carrying the show, and if it does, when it is carrying it. Some stations run it at various time periods in prime time. Others do it during the day. Others doing it on the weekend. Some will replay the show, do it in prime time, then replay it over the weekend. So you got to be very careful to know what public television station area carries it and when they do. For more details on the phone online and if your local PBS station carries it, here's where you go. Flybrother.net. That's Flybrother, all one phrase, .net, National Digital Television again. Fly Brother, on a growing number of public television stations across the country. Ernest White II, the host of the series, joining us live from San Francisco, the home of KQED. Thank you for joining us. Good luck with the series. Congrats on the way it's starting, and hopefully we'll get through these pandemic times and a whole lot more and a great long road for your series down the road.
Thank you so much, Simon. It was a pleasure to be here and to talk to people more about global connection and travel. Thank you.
Pleasure on my end, too, and thank you for what you're doing to connect all of us to how the world can be and where it's all going.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care. Enjoy. Ernest White II, joining us live from San Francisco. Again, the phone is Fly Brother. For more details online, flybrother.net. And now, a comment. A week ago on this program, we did an exclusive interview with Graham Manson, the executive producer of Snowpiercer. It was 5 years in the making, and last night it finally arrived on TNT. I saw the program. I like it. I like the performances by Jennifer Connelly, Daveed Diggs, and others in the cast. I know that the critics were sort of on the mixed side of things, and we're waiting to hear from Rotten Tomatoes what the audience thinks about it. I think they'll like it, and that's why I think it will do very well this season, and it's already been approved for a second season. Now, if you saw the credits at the end of the show, you may have noticed that the show is produced in Canada, and they were able to get most of the second season produced before the pandemic broke out all over the world. Now, here's why I mentioned Canada, because Canada, over the last two decades, has become a major home for television through Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, Ottawa, Hamilton. All have become major TV production centers. And I got to think that given the fact that we're seeing more and more countries that have gone through the pandemic, now back open in TV production, Spain, New Zealand, Iceland, and this week Britain, with shows like EastEnders from the BBC, the nightly soap opera that's carried on many public television stations here in the United States, that sooner or later, Canada is going to open up again. And everybody here in Los Angeles and New York and other major production centers had better pay attention to when Canada's going to open its door. Because here's why. Because we are still waiting to hear from, in here in New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo and Mayor Bill de Blasio, and in Los Angeles, Mayor Eric Garcetti and Governor Gavin Newsom. We haven't heard a thing from them about when television production is going to resume. Because currently, when it comes to the United States, it's all shut down. There are starting to be some signs. Tyler Perry is going to start up in July with at least two of his original series for BET. There's talk that other states, like New Mexico, like Utah, may start to open things up again. But when it comes to big production centers, New York, L.A., Chicago, still zip. You get a sense that it is, as I said to somebody on our show Friday, low person on the totem pole. And frankly, that can't be. Why? Because New York, L.A., Chicago, with the Dick Wolf shows in particular on NBC, the Chicago Trilogy, they are responsible. TV production is responsible for hundreds of thousands of jobs, both directly and indirectly, and billions of dollars in local revenue. And you better believe that if Canada opens up to the north and really gets it going, if New York and L.A. doesn't get off the behind and start moving to get production back, then Canada is going to grab that business, and they're going to make a major play for it. And that would be detrimental, to say the least, for the major cities in this country. Think about this, by the way. New York City, before the pandemic, was at work with 70-plus scripted TV shows, 70-plus scripted shows by itself, produced here in New York. And that all went down the drain when production was stopped. But what's going to happen when CBS announces their primetime schedule and they find, oh, we can't produce this, because we don't know when we're going to get this in production or when we're going to put this on a schedule. So I'm calling for Canada to follow the lead of other countries around the world in getting off the ground, because maybe, just maybe, them getting off the ground might throw the monkey wrench, a well-needed monkey wrench, into the powers that be in New York, the powers that be in Los Angeles, the powers that be in Chicago, and many other places around the country, Austin, Texas, Atlanta, etc., to get their production acts together and get this TV production back in business. This is an essential service. For this medium of television, TV production and production studios, production companies, individual ventures, they are essential services. And it's way overdue for the governmental powers that be in this city, in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, in Chicago, and elsewhere to get that message. And if they don't get the message soon, the folks up north are going to get a lot more new business in times ahead. When we come back, we'll be joined live in London by Abby Morgan, the award-winning writer behind the Sundance TV series The Split, about to go into season 2 later this week. And we'll also pay tribute to a trio of people who passed away over this last weekend, but before they did, made a great contribution to the television medium. We will get to all of that after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're connected to www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and TuneInRadio.com. Together, over 40 main listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home for Pop Rocks Radio. Check out Jamie Rocks and her weekly series tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. I understand she's got a great, great lineup of guests in store for you. And, of course, you can be interactive with her by phone or chat room. That's Pop Rocks Radio with Jamie Rocks, ROXX by name, tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget, best meet you on Spreaker 24/7 at youtube.com and the Coronavirus News Channel 24/7 at tunein.com. Welcome back to the Army Televised for this first Monday of this week, getting ready for pre-Memorial Day 2020, 1 week from now. And what with those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, Simon Apple with you live from wherever you are, 57 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy to have you with us for the first of three episodes this week of the program All About Television. You have a question or comments for our guest ahead, let the phone ring for all of us, 646-652-2906. 646-652-2906. Number of it anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is still in business. Simon Applebaum, SimonApple04 at www.blogtalkradio.com. If you shout out the phone, use the room, and we will get you aboard. We started this episode an hour ago with a look at a relationship series coming to Fox, unscripted, called Labor of Love on Thursday night. Well, we're going to end off today with another series, also about relationships, this time scripted, based in London, and won rave reviews when it first premiered last year on Sundance TV. It's called The Split. Second season begins Thursday night, midnight Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific. Joining us live from London, where it is already prime time, the award-winning writer who created the series and serves as one of the executive producers, Abby Morgan. Abby, welcome in.
Thank you so much for having me. Lovely to talk to you.
It is a pleasure. How did you come up with The Split? Was it based on anything personal, or was it based on the relationships with people you knew in London?
Well, I mean, I come from divorced parents, and my parents divorced when I was 12, and I've always been fascinated by the mechanics of divorce and the acrimony that can surround divorce. And one day I was watching a hockey match that my kids were playing at school, and I got talking to one of the moms, and I asked what she did, and she said, I'm a family lawyer. I specialize in divorce. And by the end of the hockey match, I thought this is a great arena for drama, really. So that was the starting point. That was the drive.
If I can get personal a little bit, Abby, why did your parents divorce? And was that covered in some manner with the characters in her first season?
Well, I think I grew up in the 80s, and I think divorce was very different then. You know, Margaret Thatcher was the first female prime minister who allowed women to have their own credit cards without the signature of their husbands, and that meant a lot of women were able to liberate themselves from marriage. And so, divorce was very regressive when I was a child, and I was really interested in looking at modern divorce. And also, London is the divorce capital of the world. You know, people come to London because it's notoriously fair, particularly to women. And so I wanted to do a very female-led drama. It's very, as a profession, it's a lot of women, and I just thought it's a really great way for me, I suppose, to look at my own experience of divorce, which, you know, was, probably quite typical in many ways, you know, parents at war who reconcile and become friends at a later stage. But actually, I want to look at the good divorces as well as the bad, and really just, you know, the provocative stories that came out of that. So, I mean, that was kind of as personal as it got, really. And in many ways, the central characters of Nathan and Hannah is a way to explore not only the professional fallout of being a divorce lawyer, family lawyer, but also the personal on their own marriage.
When you created The Split, Abby, what was the most important thing that people don't think about when it comes to making a marriage work or considering to not make it work, to break up, to get a divorce?
Yeah.
What was sort of the underbelly that you felt needed to be brought out into the open?
Well, I think I was very curious. You know, I think if you have children, you often end up having, you know, glasses of wine with the other mothers and other parents. And one of the things I realized is that it's still quite taboo to talk about failure in marriage and the problems in marriage. I think we all want to present ourselves as, an idealized view of it. And one of the things I found really interesting talking to the female, you know, the divorce lawyers that I spoke to was the complexity of the cases, you know, and they don't just deal in divorce, they also deal in adoption cases, they deal in surrogacy, they deal, you know, it's quite a wide brief. But I think fundamentally I wanted to really say to an audience, you know, you're not alone, marriage is complex. And, you know, a lawyer said to me, you know, an affair doesn't have to be the end of a marriage. And I also wanted to explore why people have affairs, you know, does it herald the end of the relationship or is it a way to punctuate and initiate change? And so, you know, as much as it's about people looking to end their relationships. It's also about people looking to how they can change their relationships as well. So I was really fascinated by that as a world. And also, you know, we're in a world now where people don't marry. You know, they cohabit. And why do we still marry? And what in essence, you know, what is the point of marriage? And why is it still so essential to us as beings and as family units? And so it was a way to explore those kind of very universal themes, I guess.
For those who didn't see the first season of The Split on Sundance TV, or elsewhere for those of you catching us around the world, that you did something very interesting. Rather than do a series about a set of families, each with their own marriage issue, you actually have a sort of a Little Women kind of feel where you have three women in the same family, their sisters, and their mother, and they're all going through individual issues as well as a collective issue.
Yeah, completely. I love that analogy. Thanks. That's a nice comparison. I'll take that.
How did you come up with the idea of making that more of a fraternal or family-oriented kind of thing, as opposed to having different families play out different scenarios?
Yeah, I guess I wanted to look at the fault line and legacy of divorce, and so the way to look at that was to look at generational marriages. And actually, you know, when I went to see many of the divorce laws, you know, as it's a predominantly, certainly in the UK, it's a predominantly female industry. There are men, but it is predominantly women. There was real matriarchs in that. And so I liked, as you said, I liked the idea of a matriarch as at the head of the family. And actually, it's about, a woman who mixes her DNA but produces three very different daughters. And as a result of that, they have three very different kinds of relationships. And so, you know, we have the central character of Hannah Stern, who is married to Nathan, and they're both, you know, he's a QC barrister in family law. She's a divorce lawyer. And she has a younger sister, Nina, who's kind of wayward and is a party girl in series one. And you'll see a sort of transformation of her in series two. And then we have Rose, the younger sister, the kind of you know, the afterthought baby. She calls herself the Band-Aid baby. She came late in her parents' marriage at the point where it's probably on the edge of dissolving. And she's someone who's just newly, you know, in series one, she's just got married to this lovely guy. And series two is really about her finding her feet in a marriage that doesn't have a great, in a family where marriage doesn't have a great track record. So it was a way to look at really the legacy of divorce as well. When your parents have been divorced, how you try and shape your own marriage and not necessarily follow the same blueprint of your parents.
The Split is the series we are talking about, and it goes into its second season on Sundance TV. It's a BBC One, by the way, co-production with Sundance TV. And the second set of episodes will premiere this Thursday night at a unique time, midnight on the East Coast, 9 p.m. on the West Coast. We're talking with the award-winning writer who put together the series, Abby Morgan. She's creator, one of the executive producers, and the writer of the series, too, both one and two. And she joins us live from London, where it is now prime time, Monday night. This half hour on tomorrow will be televised. Sorry, I'm all of you live from wherever you are. Good to have you aboard on the other end of the Atlantic. And it's now 67 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Abby, don't be shy. Make the call. Be interactive with us. 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our third episode of the week comes your way on Friday as a big two-hour one. First, from the brand-new Star series, Hightown, that premiered last night, we will have the creator and executive producer of that program, Rebecca Cutter. By the way, the episode is directed by the Oscar-nominated cinematographer of Mudbound, Rachel Morrison. If you haven't seen her work, both as director and cinematographer, she is marvelous. From shows like American Crime and also movies like us, like Mudbound, where she became the first Oscar-nominated cinematographer who's female, but also the excellent movie Fruitvale Station. So Rebecca Cutter from Hightown will kick things off. Then we will have the executive in charge of a new network on smart TV sets and devices called Unidentified, Adam Brustoff. And we will take you inside a program from the American Film Institute out to cause more people of color in the world of television. They call it the 2020 Writers Ready Room. We'll have Ann Thomas, the AFI executive in charge. We'll have the mentor, one of the mentors of that program, Latoya Morgan, who's also working on AMC Networks project, also out to develop diversity in television. And we'll have one of the participants, Kenda Greenwood Moran. And finally, from the brand new National Geographic miniseries coming out Memorial Day weekend, Farskins, executive producer and director, David Slade. Great all-star lineup for you this Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, two-hour edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. That's New Pacific, 3 days here, right here, on tomorrow will be televised. So, Abby, what was most important in terms of feedback that you got from viewers about the first season, and did you incorporate into the second season that will kick off Thursday?
I think in many ways what was lovely was to see the way the season's grown, you know, from one to two, and the way we've really built our audience. I think it was lovely, you know, the show, when the show hits, it's when you're stopped in the street by people who you know, or friends of friends, or just, you know, people have heard on The Great Run, you wrote it, and, you know, this is a real show that seems to have touched certainly women. You know, I'm a woman in my late 40s, early 50s, and it's certainly touched women of that generation, but also I have, you know, I have a late teen-year-old daughter, and her daughters, you know, her friends have been watching it. So I think what's touched me is the fact that there's a huge range of audience watching the show, and I think it's because it connects, because it's not only about adult, you know, relationships and marriage, it's also about teen love affairs. You know, Hannah Stern has a daughter called Liv, and she's going through her own romantic trials and tribulations, and I think, again, it's a way the teenagers, you know, how they're placed within a family, and they sort of observe their parents. So to me, it was just really important that it felt real, that it was something that people could identify with, and that it was something that could touch them, and they, you know, that it made families feel less alone, and marriages feel less broken in a way. They make, you know, it's about saying we don't live in a perfect world, you know, we don't have to have the most, you know, perfect lives, but actually it doesn't mean that marriages are over, they may be just changing and evolving over time. So in a way, what's been nice is that's really chimed and been a real dog whistle amongst the, you know, community of women and that I meet every day. So that's been really lovely.
And then, if you haven't seen the series, we should let you know that the sisters that are portrayed in the program are by Nicola Walker, by Annabelle Scully, and by Fiona Button. The mother is played by Deborah Finley. And also the men in the series are played by Stephen Mangan, by Rudy Dunn. I can't say it. Can you say the last name of Rudy's last name?
Oh, Atsma. Atsma. Barry Atsma. A-T-S-M-A. Atsma.
Right. I got Barry, but there's Rudy, who has a name that starts with a D, and it is like,
Dumalingam. Yeah, Dumalingam. It's a very difficult name to say.
Yeah.
Rudy Dumalingam.
It has a nice rhyming style to it. And also,
he does. He's
an
amazing actor. Uh-huh. Amazing actor.
And also another amazing actor, Abby, is Anthony Head, who we've seen a lot all over the place on television on both sides of the Atlantic, and he's also in the series,
Yeah, he runs absolutely through the spine of Series 1. He's really important. He's been, you know, he's the absent father who returns in Series 1. And really, he becomes the kind of role model and model for the girls for their own relationships in many ways, the ghost that really haunts their relationship. Amazing actor to work with.
Were there any marching orders that you and the producers gave to your actors in terms of how you develop your characters, especially if you're married? To put yourself in the position of somebody who is considering divorce.
Yeah, I think it's very, I think it's very interesting. I think the key with any great show is the alchemy of casting and the actors who come together. And we were really lucky. You know, I've had it once or twice with shows that I've done that if you can get that alchemy right, it almost writes itself. So in many ways, you know, Stephen Mangan and Nicola Walker actually knew each other. They'd been at college together and they were friends. And so that was a great dynamic to build up the heart of the drama. But they're also, you know, both married. And I think, you know, as are Annabelle. Annabelle's very newly married, as is Fiona. And so what was really lovely is that, you know, you had three women who had their own personal experiences. And, you know, Stephen and Barry, who also have their own partnerships and marriages. And I think they all drew upon certain elements of it. But I think the great actors are brilliant at channeling the work. And actually, they may draw upon or reflect upon, you know, their own relationships. But it's also they're brilliant chameleons and they're brilliant magpies, but, like observing other people and transforming themselves, but also stealing from other stories. So I think whilst, you know, they could understand and reflect and bring a lot of the personal to it, I think it's about the universality as well that they were really drawn to, because, you know, each one of them has a very different, you know, component to their relationship. You know, one is, you know, at a very early stage in her marriage, one is a marriage that's been, they've been together 20 years plus, you know, they've got three kids, the kids are starting to fly the nest, and then there's a woman in the middle of it who's trying to find relationships, find love at an age that says society says you should be married by now, you should have you should have children. So so I think, you know, they definitely draw on, I'm sure, personal experience, but I think great actors are really good at, you know, also just sort of reflecting beyond that into something more universal.
Abby, we'll get into how season two unfolds in a moment. First of all, you had a tremendous partner in executive producing the series in Jane Featherstone. She was the responsible for award-winning series Chernobyl, which is now a nominee for a Peabody Award here in the United States, won the Emmy Award last year for Best Miniseries. She's also done Broadchurch, one of the great British shows of recent years, and also a show that was on AMC several years ago called Humans, which I loved, from that production company. What's it like to have somebody like Jane alongside you?
Oh, I mean, it's fantastic. You know, I've known Jane for 20 years, and we have a very long friendship as well as a working relationship. And you know, I started off doing a piece for HBO with her about the Boxing Day tsunami, and then I went on to do a show called The Hour, which is all set in the 50s newsroom, which we won an Emmy for. And I also worked on River, which was a thriller starring Nicola Walker again and Stellan Skarsgård. And so we have a very long and tested relationship. But where Jane is really unique is not only is she an amazing businesswoman and producer in the sense that she knows how to bring a cast together, but she's also phenomenal creatively.
By the way, love The Hour. An excellent series about the media and how it plays out. One of the best, I think, series about media and how it works, the inside, and making it, and very entertaining. And then, no wonder it got a great following here in the United States and around the world, and also a lot of awards, too, all over the place. So how does season two unfold? What different course did you push your characters in?
Season two really explores Hannah and the Defoe legal firm has now merged with Noble & Hale, a rival company, and it's basically about a blended family, a legal blended family, but also it's about Hannah taking on a case of a woman who you realize is dealing with, she's a celebrity, she's a high-profile celebrity, she's married to a high-profile musician and sort of talent entrepreneur, and you realize that actually at the heart of their marriage is a very abusive, coercive, fractured relationship, and it's really about her taking on that case, but also in parallel, it's about her embarking on her own affair. And so it's about our divorce lawyer, our family lawyer, who in series one, her marriage has been seriously tested, and in series two, she embarks on an affair with Christy Carmichael, who is a fellow lawyer. So it's about the personal and private kind of colliding. And then it sort of also then reflects on the rest of the family, and you see her sister going through early stages of fertility issues and how that's affecting her marriage, and then her other sister, Nina, who had been a party girl all her life and starting to tire of that and wanting more from her life. And then the matriarch, Deborah Finley, is coming to terms with the fact that she no longer is kingpin and head of her own legal firm, but that she now must merge with, people who were once her rivals. And it's really about an older woman adjusting to that and actually being fearlessly and opposed to any kind of retirement. So it's about the sort of machinations of the very female-led drama, but it's really about the personal and the private kind of colliding.
Well, welcome. The truth made plain into our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. If you have a question or comment for all our guests in their remaining moments, please put in the room or make the call, 646-652-2906. And, of course, the chat room is Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com. We've got Abby Morgan with us live from London. She is the creator and executive producer of The Split, the critically acclaimed series on Sundance TV, going into its second season this Thursday night at midnight Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific. So if you have that question or comment, put in the room, make the call. Sooner we do, sooner we get to it. And by the way, if you'd like to catch up on any of our episodes this month, go to our homepage, anytime you like, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version, available 24/7 at iTunes, Apple TV, Spreaker Podcast app, also at TuneIn.com and iHeartRadio.com. And those last two websites, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you're right in. I understand that the BBC is going back into production this week with EastEnders and Top Gear. What does the environment look like in terms of getting TV back in production in England?
Well, you know, we're in a very strange place. You know, I mean, as you know, we're just going through a sort of very slow modification of lockdown. So I think the feeling that if your work is essential and you can't do it at home, then you can go to, you know, there's, you can go to work. And essentially what we do is, you know, communal, and obviously we need to work together. So I think the feeling is that, you know, people are just trying to assess and work out different ways they're going to be able to make drama, you know, with social distancing intact. I mean, I saw a friend recently sent me a photo of a commercial that's just been shot. It was a day and a half commercial, and it was about a team of about 20, and they're all in hazmat suits, and, you know, the boom operator with a mask on and gloves, and you realize, you know, it's a very new world, and they're all, you know, they're standing against green screen. So I think we're all excited, you know, for the potential to get back to working. I just think people are trying to work out whether you're going to have to kind of lock down in a city or in a town. You know, obviously, you know, I heard you talking earlier about Canada and North, you know, that actually, you know, those kind of places may be where people locate, you know, for whole long periods, and they have quarantine periods when they arrive at the dread shoot. The other is how do you shoot with social distancing, and how do you keep people in frame when they have to have 2 meters apart? You know, I think these are all problems that people are trying to work out. And then on the bigger scheme, I think we're trying to work out, you know, we know that the sort of shape of a pandemic, and everyone's saying that it's likely that this pandemic will have another spike, you know, in late winter, and certainly one in spring. And so I think we're all accepting that it'll be a stop-start economy. So it may well be that shows start and stop, and it'll be those films and those TV shows that are containable, I imagine, that can still be shot. Whereas I think what's really hard and is kind of incredible about the fact that EastEnders is up and running is that it's such an institution, but it's a nightly show, and I'm just curious to see how they'll be able to sustain if we do have this kind of stop-start lockdown.
Yeah, Abby, we too on this side of the Atlantic, and we all hope that we can get TV production back and booming, have it be safe, but ultimately have it in such a way that social distancing is not the law of the land, that it is put in the path where it belongs, and it never happens again, and we never have the kind of situation where we let a pandemic rule the world. Hopefully not. The name of the program is The Split. Season number 2 begins this Thursday night on Sundance TV on cable and satellite, midnight Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific. Again, check your locals to where that program and the network is in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.sundancetv.com. It's www.sundancetv.com. The Split, this Thursday, Season 2, midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific. Abby Morton joining us live from London. Thank you again for coming on. Congratulations on getting the second season off the ground. Hopefully many, many more in store, whether it's this program or other work from you and your fellow creators. It's been a delight to have you with us. I really appreciate the time.
Thanks so much. Lovely to talk to you.
You got it, Abby. Take care. And by the way, all the best to everybody at BBC and the entire British TV production community. Let's get everything back even better in the months ahead.
Thanks, and love to you. Thanks a lot. Good luck with it all. Bye.
You're welcome. Take care. Abby Morgan joining us live from London, creator and executive producer of The Split on Sundance TV. And finally, we end on a melancholy note. Over this weekend, 3 people, all of whom had major contributions to make in television these last few decades, passed away. If you like the fact that we are seeing more women in the world of sports television, anchoring programs, reporters, etc., well, you have one person to thank for that. The person that started it all, Phyllis George. She did it with the NFL Today alongside Brent Musburger and Herb Cross for most of the 70s on CBS, before and after National Football League games on Sunday afternoons. She passed away this weekend at the age of 70 from a blood disorder she had actually started while she was doing the NFL Today. And if you watch tapes or film of her work, she really was someone who really made a difference in terms of getting the best out of her guests and out of her subject matter. And after her work on the NFL Today, she did other programs on television. She later married the former governor of Kentucky, John Y. Brown, and became a really great businesswoman while being a great first lady of Kentucky. Then there's Lynn Shelton. She died this weekend at the age of 54, and she was on her way to having a great television career, directing shows like Glow and Mad Men. I have a hunch that she will get a posthumous Emmy nomination for her work on Little Fires Everywhere. People know who works with her know, tells you that she was absolutely great in her craft and always came to the studio or to the production scene with a great smile that lit up the place. And finally, if you love comedy, one of the great second bananas passed away this weekend. I'm talking about Fred Willard, who passed away at the age of 86. His last work was for the classic ABC series Modern Family, and he was with it until he died. For many years, he was one of the great second bananas. Remember him as Jerry Hubbard on Fred Wood Tonight, America Tonight? Remember him for all his great work and film with the Christopher Guest movies like Best in Show and The Mighty Wind? Whenever there was a great comedy, you had a sense Fred Willard was going to be there. And the same thing with great television shows. He always made the material better. He had great improv skills, great people skills. He was something very special. And the thing was, he worked right up till the end. Fred Willard passed away at 86. Lynn Shum, 54. Phyllis George, 70. All passed away this weekend. And all made a great mark in their own special way in the world of television. And again, I got to say this about Phyllis George. Anybody who is anybody who is a woman in the world of sports television really owes, in a way, their career to what Phyllis George did. She did it at a time when a lot of people thought, oh, she's another pretty face. She's not going to amount to much. She amounted to a lot. And a lot of people, as I said, every woman involved in sports television should really thank her in memoriam for paving the way for their own careers. And that is a great legacy for Phyllis George to have. Again, I want to thank all of our guests for being with us on this first 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised this week. We are back with you on Wednesday with another 90 minutes in store for you. And joining us will be from the popular weekend series Mission Unstoppable, just won the Gracie Award for American Women in Film and Television, producer and showrunner Anna Wenger. And then former CNBC and TiVo head Tom Rogers, now executive chairman of Engine Media and the new network on smart TV sets and devices, UMG TV. And finally, from the upcoming PBS documentary, Viral, Anti-Semitism and Foreign Mutations, producer and director, Andrew Goldberg. And coming up on Friday, among our guests, the creator and executive producer of Hightown, the new Star series winning rave reviews and premiered last night, Rebecca Cutter. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget to check out our podcast anytime this week. Also makes great listening over the Memorial Day weekend for you and others. That's going to be on iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker Podcast app, TuneIn.com, and iHeartRadio.com. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our program today? What's your thought for where TV is at and where it is going post-pandemic? Love to hear from you. So email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're from. I do respond within 24 hours. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, we love hearing from you and we respond because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker Tuner Radio, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate for BTR is Candace Williams. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Sonberg is executive content producer. Account fund and co-founders identified Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. With three pre-order books and one on trial, AudibleTrial.com says how much makes a great Memorial Day weekend gift for you or for others. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Monday. We're back with you less than 48 hours from now. That's Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where. Blocks of radio, speaker, TuneIn Radio, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you have to be doing now and then, please make it safe, make it great. Please follow the guidelines, and let's lift this pandemic once and for all. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.